Welcome to Education 3.0, the new podcast from Kennesaw State University's iTeach Center, where we delve into educational topics like personalized learning, instructional coaching, and the maker movement, and where we get a chance to meet the incredible teachers, administrators, coaches, and students that are out there doing the work every day. All right, welcome to the podcast, everybody. Thank you for joining us. It's Thursday afternoon here in Atlanta. We are at the GAETC 2017, and I am fortunate to be sitting here with one of our featured speakers here at the conference this year, Steve Garten. And Steve is a senior manager for Common Sense Education in the Learning Solutions Program. So first and foremost, Steve, thanks for joining us. Thanks for sitting down with me. Thanks for giving us your time. Welcome to Atlanta.
Well, thanks, Andy. It's great to meet you, too. And I really appreciate these opportunities like this because I think the more we can work together to get the message out, I think we're all on the same page. We're all trying to do what we need to do. So thanks for the opportunity.
Absolutely. Fantastic. Thank you. How's the conference been so far for you? You seen anything really good? It's
been great. The problem is when I come to a conference like that is I have spent so much time presenting that I don't really get to see it a lot.
Right.
So I've only been to one or two sessions. They've been good. There's some good things here. And then networking with people that are coming to the sessions has been very good. So
excellent.
Presenting too much is not really a problem, but it's also something that's there. The one thing I did have fun was it was the first time that one of our sessions has been drawn on those boards that they did.
Right.
It's pretty cool to see the drawing.
Great. Fantastic.
Conference. And I love this conference. I mean, this is really the Georgia people coming together. Wonderful teachers, wonderful people. It's really a good place to go.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much. Yeah, and so for those of you who can't see right now, there are the sketchnote artists have been here, and there are these big billboards where they're going to the featured speakers to some of their presentations and doing these large, really graphic sketch notes. So it's really cool. I'll make sure to grab a picture of yours as well and tag it to the Twitter post, and we'll stick it on the feed if we can, and we'll include it in there. So fantastic. So, Steve, I don't know if you know anything about iTeach or what we do or Kennesaw State University, but we're this team called iTeach, and we work directly with K-12 schools. We partner with teachers, administrators, students, helping bring personalized learning to the masses, if you will, here. And what 2 years ago was a team of four of us has grown to a team of about 53 instructional coaches that are embedded in schools here in and around the metro Atlanta area every day. And so this podcast has grown out of a wanting by me to share out a lot of the good work that our coaches are doing. And so I started the podcast in August, so we're new. I'm an amateur podcast videographer. I'm a teacher by trade. I'm a 15 years classroom teacher. I'm a high school guy. And just started doing this very recently. And so we run out, because there's 53 of us, I thought, hey, we'll do one a week. So I push a podcast out once a week where I talk to a coach and learn some tips and strategies that they're using in their school with their student populations and things they're doing to be successful. But the first question I always ask them when they're on the podcast is to describe their average day. So, Steve, what does your average day look like?
Thanks, Andy. The thing is, there is no average day. You know, both in the tech world and Common Sense is a very, very busy place.
So, right.
You know, we have a lot of projects that we're pushing out now. I've been spending a lot of time on our new premium product that we've been working on, sort of a bridge between all of our free resources that are out there and then actually having feet on the ground.
There you go.
So as a nonprofit, you know, trying to find a way that we can actually balance the finances and how that works. So spending a lot of time on building that platform, getting that platform out, onboarding people, making sure they're okay. But also conferences like this where, you know, we're going around saying the message. I love working for Common Sense because people either love us or don't know us.
Oh, right.
I mean, if you don't know Common Sense, then usually I have people say, well, I don't know what that is. But anybody that knows, oh, yeah, I love it and I use this part. You know, so I'm in the education division, but also always, you know, promoting our Common Sense media part with our reviews, talking about kids' advocacy that a lot of people don't know. You have an advocacy arm that works out of California and D.C. and other places promoting digital citizenship and student privacy as we're going out there, and then just getting the resources out there. My big thing is really helping teachers. I am a teacher, I've been a teacher, and even when I went to, you know, so far as to be the technology coordinator at the state level for the state of Maine, it's still a teacher that I think of.
Right.
I've seen, since I've had a lot of experience, I've seen a lot of really cool things in the classroom. And I consider my role really to share what those are, to get those out there, and then, you know, maybe point out some things that I've seen or haven't seen, because every situation is different, every technology implementation is a different thing.
Right.
And I think, for me, technology is really the only way we can truly get to this individualized point that we all talk about. So we all say, every child, every kid gets what they need, we're going to be individualized, and yet, at the classroom level, we still have all these students who are managing at the same time.
Right.
So for me, talking about tools, talking about ways, talking about thought processes, and then obviously the professional development for the teachers, because you can't just say, hey, go ahead and do this and put technology in place.
Right.
So I've been lucky enough to work at the policy level, I've been working at the classroom level, I've been working at the ED creation level, really sort of all facets of that to have that put in. So what my day is really just dealing with whatever comes up for that day that we need to make sure that it's ready to go. Presenting at things like this where a lot of people don't know about our resources and showing them what they are. And then working one-on-one with teachers, districts, and groups of people to help them implement technology in a way that makes sense. So really, that's my deal. Whatever we can do to help the classroom teacher, that's what I want.
Right, in a way that makes common sense.
Common sense.
See what I did there?
That was a good one, Andy. I like that. And it's also funny because when I talk about, does anyone know common sense? No, that's not right. Does anybody have common sense?
Right.
No. There's really no way, and yet common sense is such a great name.
Right.
Because there really is a lot of lack of common sense when you're out there and talk about this.
Right.
Both at the classroom level, because you don't know, you're not given the resources, materials to do that, and then at the district level when you're trying to put this in. And I do want to say thank you, because we need the interaction between K-12 and the university.
Absolutely.
I think that's been sort of a disconnect that's happened for the years, where the universities have the educational piece and they have the theory, but there's really been a disconnect with what's happening on the ground, because it happens so quickly.
Right.
So teachers often have not felt prepared by university, and I think having things like this where you're actually out there is the best thing we need to do, because we need universities supporting what's happening.
Absolutely. We really are in a fortunate position, because we're embedded in the university but work outside. So we have this unique partnership with the teacher program in our university. So we're bringing back the real world data that, you know, the professors need to design the coursework so that those new teachers are prepared. Because too many times we're finding that they're not, you know, that they're getting out there and they're kind of shell-shocked as to the new technologies, the software, the innovative teaching practices that they're finding in the classroom that they weren't necessarily prepared for.
And I think that also, teaching is tough anyway. When you start, you really are never totally prepared when you go to do that. But I think for teachers to feel comfortable to allow technology to be used to help, you know, teachers need to understand that they don't need to know all the technology. They're the purveyors of quality. They're the ones that need to be able to assess the use of technology.
Right.
But I think that's where teachers struggle, feeling like they need to be in control. They need to know what's going on. And it is their classroom.
Right.
You run their classroom. Close and focus is certainly one of the most important things teachers can know.
Right.
But I think there is a lack of really good professional development in a meaningful way to get that out there.
Absolutely. And that's where we're involved as well, is trying to help those teachers in those exact situations. So I love common sense. I want to give you guys a plug too real quick, because I do a little work. I do parent workshops as a parent. I've been in this role for several years, and so there's always been devices at my house, you know, connected to the internet, and my boys are now 13 and 11, but it wasn't that long ago when they were 5 and 7 and 7 and 9, and there's always devices around, and I remember my wife, we were watching the news one night, and there was this news story from Ohio where a young girl had been taken advantage of, and, you know, it was the culprits were these boys in town that everyone in town described as good boys. They made good grades. They were stars on the football team. Small town, and it was how could this happen? And everything that came to transpire about this case, we came to found out through social media and through these high school kids' interactions and their connectivity. And long story short, my wife looked at me and said, "Andy, how do we make sure that our boys aren't these boys?" And I didn't have an answer for her. So I set out to learn, how can I teach my kids to be responsible? And my go-to spot was common sense. And still, to this day, that was, I think, 2013 when I started working with parents. To this day, every time I tell parents, you got to go to common sense. They are the end-all, be-all. They're the resource hub. You got to go to common sense, and you got to see, and you got to learn. That's where you learn. And so thank you. Thank you, Common Sense. Thank you, Steve Garden. Thank you for providing those free for parents, for teachers, for everyone out there who's trying to do the right thing, and is overwhelmed by all of this new stuff that our parents certainly didn't have to deal with. These kids today, they're the first generation being raised connected to the internet. So all of these bridges we're crossing as parents, we're crossing it for the first time. To have a resource like Common Sense out there is certainly a godsend.
Thank you, Andy. I appreciate that. And I think the big thing is that the resources need to be there, because it's not internet safety. Internet safety is part of it, but it's really a matter of digital citizenship. I mean, to be a citizen of a country, you have to be born there or take a large test. Our kids are born digital citizens, where some of us, sure, members of the organization, are not. So we have to sort of take the test to do that. But I think, just like you can't automatically be a good citizen of the country by being born there, you need to have steps to be taken. Talk about civic responsibility. Talk about, why do we have laws in place to be able to do that? And I think, as you're right, as the kids are coming up, they're not really sure, because it's a whole new world that's out there now. So I think we have a whole team that's really worked very hard to develop these resources to get those minds thinking. Our early elementary curriculum is really all about defining, yes, here's what you should and shouldn't do. As we get into the later elementary, they're creating things and stuff to actually put that in their head. Then the middle school, they move into those gray areas and, what do I want to be? And the upper level is really, what do I want my footprint to be?
Right.
I mean, and you have to have a footprint these days. You can't just sort of be off the grid and do that. So what do I actually want to portray myself as, and how do I want to do that? I think our resources have been very good at doing that. There's certainly some other things that are out there, but I think we really have a very comprehensive...
They are. They're fantastic. My wife is a high school counselor, and she talks a lot about how are you going to sell yourself? Because colleges are looking, employers are looking. What do you want your message to say? And it's not just confined to a paper application anymore. I mean, what does your digital application say about you? And that you're in control of that. And you've got to take the initiative to really control what your online persona says about you.
And I also think that it's important to have that creation piece starting early with the technology and everything else. Because for me, there still is a digital divide as far as access.
Absolutely.
We still have people that need access. We don't have that. But the big digital divide for me going forward is the creation versus consumption. We're going to find that if we're not teaching our kids to create properly, if they're just consuming, they're just going to sit back and be there. And I think for me, that's what our kids are going to have to be able to do, is create meaningful digital content. And that starts by having a very positive digital focus.
Absolutely. Aiden, Graham, are you listening to Steve? He knows. My children, we have this conversation daily. Quit watching their YouTube channels. Make your own channel that other people want to watch.
And that's it. And there's certainly a need for consumption. That's how you gain your knowledge. That's
right.
That's how you figure out how to put things together. But it's the creation process that allows you to grow.
I agree.
And it's not just the creation of maybe YouTube videos or whatever, but what are you doing doing to create artifacts in school to demonstrate your understanding? What are you doing to create artifacts on your own? And you'll find that you're personally invested in those, and that's what makes a difference.
Absolutely.
One of my big things for schools is I always talk about this idea of a memorable assignment.
Right.
When I think back in school, there were very few assignments that actually had any kind of meaning at all to me later, and I just sort of went through the whole thing just doing assignments. But every meaningful assignment I've ever had involved doing some research, finding out something about, compiling all that, and then creating a product. It's that creation of the product that I think has made all the difference, and those are the things you remember.
Absolutely.
And the technology now allows us to be able to actually do that product creation at an individual level.
Right.
In a way that makes a lot more sense. And teachers can manage it now in a way that they couldn't do when they were just trying to manage individual things.
Absolutely,
you know?
Yeah.
And it's still, teachers are the purveyors of quality. A good teacher is a good teacher, and it wouldn't matter whether they're using technology or not, but now that we have it, let's take advantage of it, and let's leverage it in a meaningful way so that we really get some use in the classroom and kids aren't just bored out.
Absolutely, absolutely. Fantastic. So, Steve, I'm super interested. Before you were at Common Sense, you were, I guess, with the Department of Ed in the state of Maine. And for our listeners or viewers out there that don't know anything about Maine, you guys, when you were at Maine leading them, y'all were really on the forefront of one-to-one and the idea of students going one-to-one in the classroom. So the state of Maine went one-to-one, right, with Apple products, with Macs. This was even before iPads, right? So you guys were Macs. So, go ahead.
No, and it was an open bid process. I mean, Angus King, the governor, really started that. Betty Manchester, the whole crowd that got that going on. It's been an open bid process. So while Apple has played a huge part of that, it's because they've won the bid each time
it's gone out.
There's a state bid to do that.
Very cool.
But it's been going into the 16th year of one-to-one project, and people like Jeff Mao spearheading it and guiding this thing as they're going through. It's been an amazing program to see. And I think that's really where I've gained the vision and the insight to see. I've seen technology used so well in classrooms, and then I've seen it used not so well, even after a long period of time.
Right.
But I've seen it when it's embedded correctly, when you have professional development for the teachers, or you have a network that's reliable, or you have a plan in place and policies to match that as you're going forward. It does make a huge difference and actually enable these kids to be able to take control of their own learning. And we found that in Maine, one of the things we found is when kids go to college, they often come back and say, you know, my roommate struggled with this whole free internet and all this kind of thing and not the parental and not being managed.
Right.
I learned how to take care of that in seventh grade.
Right.
So having that information, being able to police yourself, figure out what's going on, manage your time, manage the resources, I think is a very important thing to learn. And Maine's been able to do that through the school to get that coming up.
Absolutely.
Plus
Very
the
cool.
fact that kids were isolated. So when you talk about future employment, and I think there are a lot of areas like here in Georgia where kids will have to leave to get a job because there just aren't jobs there.
Right. Yes, sir.
And with the technology knowledge and the technology infrastructure and comfort of that, they'll have the opportunity to stay where they are and work remotely. I live in Southern Ohio. I work in California. I don't think that would have been possible a few years ago.
Yeah, absolutely.
More and more people are doing things remotely. So it doesn't matter where you live as long as you have connectivity. But you have to be comfortable with all those skills they've been talking about. You have to collaborate. You have to be able to be creative. You have to think about what can I do to contribute to this project and work with other people as you do.
Right.
And I think that's what we can do and leverage with the technology in schools. And that's what I saw happening so well in Maine when it was used well. That taking those examples out now for the world and saying, look, there's some things that work well. And as it changes, how are we going to adapt?
That's cool. So I'm super interested in the professional development piece, and in particular, your experience at the state level and managing, you know, thousands of teachers and managing the change process and making sure that professional development for teachers was meaningful and was intentional. So what are some things that you learned in your experience? Maybe they were, don't do this, right? Or, you know, I wish I had done this a little differently, or I wish we had done more of this. What are some, you know, what are some learning points, some data points you could share with some of our watchers?
Good question. And, of course, that's obviously a five-hour thing. thing. Which
right,
have,
right. But, you got 2 minutes.
Yeah. Professional development is the absolute key. When you're rolling out any kind of technology initiative or putting any technology in the classroom, the professional development really needs to come first.
Right.
If devices are going in, teachers need to see those devices. They need to do that. Teachers need to understand that they don't need to understand all the technology to allow students to use it, but they do have to have that comfort level. They have to know what's going on. They have to know what kind of support they've got. And then teachers need that professional development just because they feel lost or left out, or they're being told, you need to use this technology, but I'm not given resources for how to do that. I think professional development is probably the most important and often the most neglected piece of what's
happening. I would probably agree with you.
And that's really why I think the main program was successful for so long, when other ones have not, is because when they cut parts of the program, they say, oh, we can't afford this. Professional development is what they cut. They bought devices, maybe they provided bandwidth, but without the professional development, those devices are just going to sink. Teachers aren't going to use them, they're not going to allow them to be used. So teachers really need to be shown, and I think that's the trick, is to see what it looks like. What does it actually look like to have students create individual things? How can I manage this as a classroom teacher? We always start with close and focus. You're still the teacher. It's still your classroom.
Right.
However, when you talk about that individualization, you now have a tool to be able to do that. So here are some examples within your field. Here's some resources where you can find that happening. And you need an ongoing professional development. So at the state level, we had regional meetings where we met, where the teachers would come in. We had individual pieces. We had, you know, webcast things that we had going out. We had all sorts of opportunities that teachers could have, different pieces available. And with the internet now, there are so many other things available for teachers to find. But the big thing they're lacking is time. They need time, they need support, and they need that permission to fail.
Right.
Because just like we're not giving our kids permission to fail a lot, we're not giving our teachers permission to fail when they try something. You know, that just didn't work at all. That's fine. Look what you tried. Did this piece of work? Let's go ahead and take this and pick it up and see what's going on there.
Right. That's fantastic. So, if you were back in that role today, let's say Georgia called you and says, hey, Steve, we are going to go statewide one-to-one, and we want to bring you in. Would you do it the same way? How has it changed? Or, you know, what's different today? What do state leaders need to look at? And you know, maybe in, I don't even know how to, you know, I've got this question on the tip of my tongue and it's not coming out the right way.
I think I know what you're saying. It's like, what can you change? And I think some things would absolutely not be changed at all. I mean, the fact that you need a comprehensive program, that's why it worked in Maine.
Right.
Because you had the devices, the professional development, the network, the repair process. You had everything built into one package so that there wasn't a drop in any piece along there. I think too often when you're trying to implement a large-scale project, it's too separate. One person provides devices, one person provides the network, one person provides software, and then you're blaming somebody else when things don't work like that.
Right.
Kind of thing. So it needs to be a comprehensive program, and I would actually expand that now to make sure that even if there are separate parts, that they're all working together to make sure that that happens. Professional development is the most underrated piece of what's there, and it is probably the most important piece to have that out there. In addition to technology, it has to work.
Right, right.
I think too often technology is implemented at a large level without thinking about, well, wait a minute, what are we doing with this? What kind of bandwidth needs are we going to have? So it's put in and then they realize, oh, we didn't plan for bandwidth for that. Or they're using a device that takes a lot more bandwidth because now we're doing, the kids can now make movies.
Right, right.
They can do some creating things that they couldn't do before, but now we don't have the resources to do that. So how can they actually make that work? How can they actually make that work and how can they make that happen? So I think making sure that everything works well and then having that sustainability is something that Maine did so well that other places have not. It was always a per pupil per year cost, which isn't much money.
Right, right.
Instead of going in and getting a one-time thing saying, oh, we need $90 million for this. It's like, oh, and then they get the $90 million, but then it's gone. So instead of that, it's like, oh, we need $240 per kid forever to keep this going. And then the price will go up and down, and we'll see what more resources we can get. But to have that sustainability program, so when the teachers are comfortable implementing the technology, they know it's going to be updated. They know it's going to be refreshed. They know they're going to be able to keep using it.
Right.
To have a repair thing in place so no kids without a device for more than 24 hours, because if you do integrate it into a classroom, and it doesn't work, now you're stuck, and then it's going to go back to how it was.
Right, right.
We found in Maine, they'll close school if there's no water, there's no heat, or there's no internet. Because that's the way the school has gone. Culture's come to the point where if you don't have that, you can't function. All your devices are out there. And I've even found it in my personal life. When my own internet went down, I didn't know what to do, because all our shared documents are online, all of my meetings are online. You know, it was just, you know.
So I love those. Have you seen the AT&T commercials where they, you know, don't say, like, you know, 2 minutes without internet, and the guy's crying in the shower and yelling out the window, and it's like,
yeah,
it's
amazing how that happens. So to make sure you have that infrastructure in place, technology's changing, and that makes it exciting. For me, it's all about what can we do to allow these kids to create demonstrations of understanding, to build their own knowledge, to be able to leverage these tools so that they go forward, whatever these tools are, because we don't know what they're going to be.
Right.
You know, they'll be able to handle that as they're going forward, and they'll be able to then do all those, the collaboration, they'll be able to think for themselves, they'll be able to have the stick-to-itiveness to, you know, sit down and do that, you know, project they need to do to get through.
From start to finish.
Deal with the boredom of things, because sometimes technology makes things so exciting at first, but learning is a long process. It's a hard process, and there are some things that are just flat out boring.
Yes, sir.
You just have to be able to do it.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't change what happened, but I would certainly expand upon it now and then make sure that we have all these places. We did a thing with Utah. Jeff and I went out to Utah, talked to the legislature for them to put it in their 1-1 program. And the key of making that work was making sure every one of these pieces is there. You can't leave part of it out.
Right.
And some part that you think is not important will absolutely cause the program to fail unless you put it. And sustainability, of course.
Yeah. So where did you get the most pushback? Did parents push back? Did legislators push back? Was it teachers pushing back? Administrators? When you guys were talking about, we're going to roll out a device to every kid, who had the biggest beef?
It's funny because beefs are everywhere.
Right?
I mean, from the legislative perspective in Maine, we should give every kid a chainsaw. You know, that was the big thing. We should give him a chainsaw. We should give him a beer. And then overcoming that by saying, well, now, wait a minute. In order for our kids to stay in Maine, if they have a chainsaw, the forestry industry is still big there. But it's involving fewer and fewer people.
Right.
So what opportunities are going to have our kids? And that has to be a technology focus. Paper mills are gone. You know, a lot of the industry is gone. However, Maine is well wired. I mean, they have got the tech. Every single school in Maine is wired. And as a result, a lot of the communities, even in some of the rural areas, have the bandwidth to be able to do something like that. Parents have always worried. They complain about anything that changes or what's going on.
Yes.
But it's the same thing for the parents. How are we actually going to give your kids the opportunity that if they want to stay home, because Maine's an incredibly beautiful place, and kids don't want to leave, but sometimes they have to for jobs.
Right.
Now they have the option of having this technology in schools is going to help to do that. You know, schools themselves, an educational institution is a very slow pace to change. It's a big shift to turn.
Yes, sir, it is.
Have those things going. And yet, to stay relevant, to keep it current, it's going on. And I think for me, the telling thing is that education is a lot like the music industry was, with the album mentality.
Right.
When all of a sudden it went to a song mentality. My daughters don't have any albums at all. They have a lot of songs.
Right.
And education, we're still an album mentality. So to split that out, you know, with some of the largest schools in the world being the University of Phoenix for the, you know, universities, and in the state of Ohio where I live, ECOP, the electronic, is the largest school in the state because they're offering choice. So I think to be able to leverage this technology to give the kids choice, to let the parents know they're going to have choice, to have schools stay relevant, and then have administration legislators back that up because they see this as the best thing for their people. It's been successful there, and I think those are all the pieces that you have to look at when you move.
That's a super interesting analogy. I love that you use the music industry. to compare to the education. I was just reading an article yesterday about Napster, how it shook up the music industry and forced them to open their eyes and change, and super interesting. I love that. So, real quick, we're getting close to time. I know that Common Sense just made a big announcement the other day in a partnership with Bright Bytes. Can you speak to that at all and tell us what that is about?
Yeah, absolutely. And Common Sense is really trying to partner with different people to do things that are really beneficial to schools. And there's no sense in reinventing the wheel.
Right.
Bright Bytes has always had a very good data tracking, data management, that kind of stuff. So we're partnering with them to try and build that into some of our resources then and figure out, here's a good resource for schools to use. So we're doing with that. We're also trying to partner with all sorts of other people to be able to have that work out there. I mean, we're nonprofit. As a nonprofit,
right, right.
Things we can't do. And yet by partnering with other people that have some of these capabilities, then it works out okay. So it's a great partnership going forward. We'll see. We'll have a lot of different options coming out of that moving forward. But
fantastic. I'm a big supporter of Bright Bytes. I've known some folks that have worked with Bright Bytes, and we've met with them. We've had them on the university. I wish you guys all the success with that. And data, we love data. Data, data, data. So the more we can get, the better. I think the kids will be the beneficiaries.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Of all of that.
And everybody working together. I think too often there becomes this vendor standoffish type thing. And you need the relationships. We need vendors to actually understand what they need. And then schools working with vendors to be able to make sure they get the products that they need.
Absolutely.
There can't be standoffish. There's a place for nonprofits. There's a place for all the other people. It's everybody in this together.
Right.
I think we're all going to succeed together. We're all going to struggle as we're going through this.
Fantastic. Well, we are out of time. As a matter of fact, my camera just shut off, so we are now on this camera. Can we even see us? There we go. That's what happens. All right. Well, Steve Garten, everybody, Common Sense Media. We're live at Georgia Educational Technology Conference 2017. Thank you so very much. You here the rest of the day? You here tomorrow?
Yep.
You're presenting tomorrow?
I'm here the rest of the day. We're finishing all the presentations.
And then heading home after that.
Heading home,
fantastic.
Yes.
Well, happy holiday season. Safe travels home. And thank you so very much for coming out and speaking
too.
With
thank
us.
Thank you for all the work you're doing.
Appreciate it. Cheers.
Bye.
Education 3.0 is produced by the instructional coaches from iTeach at Kennesaw State University. You can reach out to them for more information, questions, or comments at their website, www.ksuiteach.org, or on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram.